and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. President Biden eulogizes the victims of the New Year's Day attack in the French Quarter during a prayer service in New Orleans.
They came from different states, even different countries. There were children, a dinner with their parents, ensuring before joining their friends on New Year's Eve.
4 years after the U.S. Capitol attack, Congress certifies Donald Trump as the 2024 presidential election winner without challenge. Vice President Kamala Harris.
One of the most important pillars of our democracy is that there will be a peaceful transfer of power.
Rudy Giuliani is found in contempt of court for not responding to information requests in a $148 million defamation judgment granted to two Georgia election workers. Loyola Law School professor Lori Levinson.
He doesn't want to give up his Palm Beach condominium. He doesn't want to give up a Manhattan apartment, but he may not have much choice.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Join us live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 5 to 6 p.m. for Playmakers, brought to you by Quality Plus Printing. Call in with your sports thoughts and feelings only on WFHR.
Christian Watson lost for the season. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Packers wide receiver Christian Watson suffered a torn ACL and did other damage to his left knee in Sunday's game against the Bears.
Yeah, it's not good. He'll be out for the season or the rest of the year.
Packers head coach Matt LaFleur on how much of a loss Watson will be for the Packers offense heading into Sunday's playoff game against the Eagles, kickoff at 3:30.
Yeah, it's a big-time loss. Just his presence on the field alone. He's so versatile in his ability to play multiple positions. You can put him at the X, the F, the Z. You can move him all over the place. Obviously, he's got an element in terms of his size and speed that's tough to replicate. There's not many built like him around the league. And I hurt for him just because I know how much he's put into this thing. It's an unfortunate part of our game. But like I told him, I know he'll attack it the right way.
NBA, the Bucks are in Toronto tonight against the Raptors. A recap coming up later tonight with Sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Good morning, beat freaks. Who's ready to move? Let's start this day right.
Tasha's morning dance parties are meeting rave reviews.
Lose your phones and find your groove.
They need an ops manager to help their community dance the morning away.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. When you sponsor a job on Indeed, it's easier for talented candidates to find it, which makes it easier for you to hire them. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Hope you had a wonderful holiday season, a Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year, all of that stuff, all of the things that we celebrate, all of the things that pull us together, all of those things that give us a reason to wake up and go to work tomorrow. Now, what's interesting is, you know, come January 20th, eggs are going to be, what, a buck a dozen again, gas, a buck a gallon. It's going to be great. Prices are going to deflate. And there'll be no repercussion from massive deflation, which is what I'm being told. Even though Trump himself says, well, you know, maybe I won't. The meme that I've been loving the most is, you know, the fake billboards. You know, they say there are billboards all over saying, you know, the rich getting richer, the lazy living free, and the middle class paying for it all ends on January 20th. And I'm going, you think that? Who's going to tell them that the ultra rich and the lazy, they're generally the same people? Yeah, you're generally paying the ultra rich to do, well, they do move money from one pocket to the other, from yours to theirs. So that is work. And I give them credit for being able to do that. But understand this idea that the rich getting richer and the lazy living free is going to, the free lunch is over. Kind of ludicrous. Because, well, we've heard this before, we've seen it before, and it hasn't changed. Now, perfect example, Social Security. Everybody knows, who's my age and a little bit older, knows the future's not that great because we have kicked the can down the proverbial alley way too long. And in fact, what is it, 2033, they're saying? By 2033, we're going to get like, what was it, a 21% cut in Social Security? Because it's gonna run out of money. And we've done nothing to really change that. And I don't see this Congress doing anything to change it either, other than make it worse, because Trump's policies, what Trump has said he wants to do, ending, taxes on tips and ending taxes on overtime, those are going to make Social Security worse, much worse. And they know that. And that's part of the plan. Now, what's interesting is Elon Musk, at a quarter after midnight the other day, January 1st, a quarter after midnight, just on his income publicly available at Tesla, paid all of the Social Security income tax he's going to pay for the entire year. Quarter after. If you throw SpaceX and that other, the Starlink thing, you throw all that in there, about 60 seconds after the hour. So at 12:01 a.m. on January 1st, he's going to pay everything he will pay into Social Security for the entire year. That's it. That 1 minute. Now, you, me, other working people, we're going to spend every day of the year working, paying into the fund. The Forbes magazine came out and said there are about 229 people right now who earn above $50 million a year, who basically, on the first few minutes, few hours of the year, have paid everything they're going to pay for the entire year. And they say, look, the fact of the matter is, 94% of workers, some 164 million, they're going to pay taxes to Social Security all year long. And the argument has always been, the fairness argument is why should just people who are working at fast food restaurants or driving trucks or swinging hammers or doing any of the thing, working in offices, cleaning up after Doge Boy and Company, why do they have to pay all year long? And well, our wealth class doesn't. And what I've been saying, and a lot of policymakers and a lot of people who know this a lot more than I do are saying, look, instead of just earned income, you collecting a paycheck, that thing that you cash at the end of the week that never seems to go far enough, instead of just calling that income, why don't we expand the definition? Scrap the cap, say, sorry, Elon, you can afford it. You're going to pay taxes just like everybody else, like every other citizen all year long. And we're going to expand what the definition of income is on interest, on business receipts, on capital gains. And we can do that at a certain point above $1 million. We can do a whole bunch of things so it doesn't hurt the working class and the working poor anymore, but goes after where the money is. Because like I said, look, that promise is struggling right now. What I found interesting is, as Forbes magazine pointed out, the highest paid, 229 highest paid Americans, they would pay about, I think the number was like $3.6 billion in Social Security tax if you scrap the cap, if they had to pay like everybody else. And those 229 people would pay as much into the system as 77% of workers earning less than $57,000 a year. Very clear. 229 people would be paying into the system as much as the bottom 77% of working people. And yet we exempt them. And then we tell that bottom 77, sorry, hey, we'd like to help you. And then we blame them when over half of the people in one poll I saw recently thinks it's because we're too generous to the poor and to immigrants, which is why our debt is so high. No, the reason our debt and our deficits are so high is because we keep giving billionaires billions of dollars. We keep moving towards creating the first trillionaire. And we do that because, well, we sacrifice. We work for lower wages, less health care, less benefits. Why? Well, so our oligarchs can have just a little bit more. I think it's wrong. I think it's ridiculous. I think it's insane. But it's where we're going. And understand, as we have redistributed wealth from working people to wealthy people, our anger level has gone up. And as I've said for years, the anger is real. The anger is justified. And if Democrats get their heads out of their keisters, might actually have a solution to making lives better. Maybe thinking about some of the things Republicans are trying to undo and maybe defend those. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I'm looking at these pictures of Matt Gaetz, and I gotta tell you, I don't know what he did to himself, but my first thought was, is this gender-affirming care? Did Matt Gaetz go and get some hair put in, some cheek work done, some stuff done, you know, some surgical stuff, some maybe medical stuff, some, you know, some drug stuff, some injection stuff, some, you know, stuff, you know, that I would consider potentially gender affirming care because he's trying to be a man. You know, I don't know, but wow, are the pictures, wow, don't do that to yourself. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on just how bad and how thrilled members of Congress are that he's not there. I asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come talk with us. Sarah's a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Whoa, does he look bad?
He should ask for his money back.
He should ask for his money back. And I think somebody who's doing the makeup for his show maybe hates him because It looks, you know, there's, if you've ever seen the Addams Family, the movie, not the TV show.
Okay.
When they're, when Morticia is on screen, they have like a light that's just on her eyes. So everything else is really dark around her, but except for her eyes, that's kind of what Matt Gaetz looks like. It's like orange and then like some sort of pasty looking peach colored mask or something. I'm not really clear on how that stuff works. Like there's clearly like some Botox stuff going on up here. But yeah, I remember when I used to call him Fat Gaetz because he was like, he had all this baby fat and he was, you know, this little chubby kid who was running around Congress. And I mean, I don't know how he got rid of it. Maybe he just like had it sucked out of his face and like put up in his cheeks or something. I don't really know. But it blessed his heart.
But you know, he should wish that it was outlawed. If he was successful at ending gender affirming care, he wouldn't have to go through this.
Honestly, I mean, I guess men are not exempt from this whole like I have to look a certain way to be on TV.
Well, no, hold on.
Pretty sure that's
not
what it is.
I don't think that is. I think, you know, he's getting a little old and a little long in the tooth and you're not attracting the teenage girls like you used to.
Oh, burn. Yeah.
Maybe 19, 18. I'm giving him the legal side. So don't sue me because you're getting a little old.
Yeah, but he's also paying them. So I'm pretty sure like he could just like knock it up like $50 and be fine. Allegedly.
Allegedly. But here's the thing, you know, members of Congress thrilled he's not there.
God, don't you know? I mean, I watching the speaker fight, I think Thomas Massie is going to be maybe somebody the next Matt Gaetz, but Thomas Massie isn't as much of an amateur, and he isn't, he doesn't necessarily have a lot of the baggage that Matt Gaetz did. So, you know, I don't know if he could have 9 votes to be able to get rid of Johnson. But it sure seems like he wants to.
Yeah.
So, I mean, watching that floor negotiation, like it was, Johnson held the vote open for quite a while. Rather than having like multiple votes back to back. And so there were 2 guys that he flipped who were, who just didn't vote. And I just want to know what he promised them. Like, what was the negotiation?
Or what he threatened them with. You know, I'm not saying he promised. I'm going, what he threatened them with.
And maybe it was a primary. I don't know. I don't think, like, these guys are really right wing and their districts are pretty safe. So I don't really know. I don't know what you threatened them with other than I'm pulling funding. You'll never get a dime from appropriations for your district. I don't know. Donald Trump's going to campaign against you.
Yeah. No,
maybe that's what it is.
No, and the thing is, as you pointed out, they're very right wing, and it's going to be interesting to see just how far right this House goes, because they do have a very, very small majority. There could be chaos. There are some who are thinking that, you know, Republicans are going to be their own worst enemy. I seem to think that Trump and Johnson and the moneyed interests who are now all in on this administration, I think they will hold them in line, and Republicans will fall into line, especially on the one big beautiful bill.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to have to make a lot of concessions to get it approved, either with Democratic votes or for the entire caucus to agree to it. We're talking about the big omnibus budget, or they're going to end up having to just pass another continuing resolution.
Yeah. So let me ask you about that then, because, you know, it's my mind that they're going to try and hold the line. They're not going to need Democratic votes. They're going to try not to give Democrats anything. How are Democrats going to react to this Trump second term? Are we going to see appeasement? Are we going to see resistance? Are we going to see acceptance? Are we going to say, oh, we're going to work hand in hand and we're going to be, you know, MAGA light? What are you expecting?
So there are 2 ways that this can go. One is that they wait too long and some of the cabinet appointees from Congress have been confirmed and are taking their positions. That will knock down the amount of votes that Johnson can count on. And so then he will have to make some kind of deal with Democrats. The CR comes up, on the 14th, on, March 14th of 2025, Pi Day. Yeah, that's how you can remember it. It's Pi Day.
Pi Day. Love Pi Day.
I would think that by then there would be people who are confirmed, but those elections will not have taken place yet. So if they get confirmed, you know, on the 20th, then it still is not enough time to elect somebody else and get them in there to be voting. So I don't know how they make it work without some kind of concession with Democrats. The alternative is they just try and pass it, you know, the second that Trump is inaugurated. That's entirely possible.
That's what I'm expecting.
I don't know that they can make that work, because they will have had to have done all of the work in the next, right, like 18, 17 days. What are we on now? And so, I mean,
look, you got a whole army of think tanks. You got a whole infrastructure of bad idea people out there willing, I'm sure, to give a hand. You know, and I don't think they're like Democrats. Look, I think, you know, the Democrats tried the one big bill. I think Build Back Better was a real good shot in the arm to move this country in the right direction. But we had Sinema and Manchin who put a stop to that. So who will the Republicans have to be the cinemas and mansions of the world?
Honestly, I mean, the only person that I can think of is Susan Collins, because she's up for re-election in the next 2 years. Everybody else is pretty much in a safe seat. I mean, I can see Joni Ernst being a player because she's also up in 26, but I don't think she's going to lose her seat.
Right.
Unless she has like a really good Republican that runs against her. And I don't know necessarily if that would be from the right or the left, because again, like she sort of played it close to the vest when it comes to Pete Hegseth. And you can tell that she doesn't like Pete Hegseth, and I don't think she wants to vote for him. But if she ends up in a primary with a right-wing, you know, nutter who, you know, Trump supports and Elon Musk is funding, she'll lose her seat.
Yeah.
So I don't know how that works, how much they're willing to pay, play hardball with some of these senators. And I mean, in the past, it hasn't really worked. Like, when you think about Murkowski, that's my favorite example. Like, the woman won a write-in campaign for U.S. Senate. Like, there's, you can't touch her. There's nothing that those Republicans can do to her. Susan Collins, I don't know. That state's so wonky. You know, it kind of depends on what the election looks like.
And especially if Musk goes in there, as you said, and spends that money. I mean, watching Musk right now, watching Doe's boy play his hand right now, is the reason you don't allow the kind of wealth to be in one person's hand. The kind of power that he has, being, what's he worth, almost $500 billion? Mm-hmm. You know, this is the reason you don't allow that accumulation of wealth in one person's hand to be able to have the kind of outweighted power that even governments have. I mean, that's the frightening part of where he's at.
It's the oligarchy. I mean, America has officially become an oligarchy. Yep. With these rich and powerful people who are controlling things. And either they're going to control it from an election perspective, they're going to control it through lobbyists. I mean, there are so many loopholes that you could drive a massive campaign train through it.
Yeah, I mean, I look at what Musk's pulling right now. You know, he's going to go full head after the federal workforce. You know he's going to try and slash and burn the federal government like he did to Twitter and to other places. You know that the cuts are going to be deep and painful, and ultimately that we, the people, are going to pay the bill. But ultimately for him, it's about, well, privatization, and I would argue more profitization.
Yeah, for sure, because he is making a ton of money off of government contracts. So if he can continue to have that much influence, yep, and stop any other government contracts from, you know, his competitors coming in, like, that's his bread and butter. I'm surprised, frankly, he hasn't started his own defense contracting firm or like bought out one of the other like defense contractors so that he can then make money off of that, because he would get, you know, huge Pentagon contracts. I think I read a thing last week, I think it was, that said that we are down to 5 corporations who are running all of the defense contracting for the entire United States. Just 5 companies. So, I mean, I can see him stepping in and just being like, yeah, I think I'm going to get into the bombing business.
Well, I mean, you look at what he's done with the Starlink. I mean, you know, this is a scary, having him be able to control that individually is kind of frightening. And it's one of those things where you go, and I guess this is where my problem is. I guess I'm old enough to remember my grandparents who had great fear of accumulation of wealth. Who, you know, basically my grandfather's saying was, if a rich guy takes a buck out of his pocket to tell you you don't need something, you better spend 2 to get it, because that guy understands return on investment. So when Musk spends millions of dollars to get Trump and other Republicans elected, I'm like, well, what's in it for him? And what's in it for him is, you know, billions when he spent millions, because he understands a good investment.
Yeah, and I think the economy is starting to seem more and more like the robber baron age. And we've all of those protections that I feel like we put in place after the Great Depression and after World War II, I feel like those have just been, you know, unmade. And
well,
so now
they've
been
slowly
position.
Been undone to the point to where now they're going to finish them off. In fact, you know, I just had a conversation recently with somebody who was saying, hey, they're going to privatize Medicare? I'm going, dude, they're already halfway there.
Yeah.
You're that far behind the game. They are going to privatize and profitize every function of government. When you have CEOs running our government, they're going to run it like a business. And nothing drives me crazier than when I hear a working person tell me, well, we need to run the country. You know, we need government to run like a business, which is nonsense.
It is nonsense because it's more expensive. So we end up spending more money by privately contracting out things rather than having our own people do it. And, you know, I mean, maybe that's what Republicans really want is, you know, they want small government that spends more, which is the weirdest thing in the world. But that's basically what they're creating.
And, you know, I look at the fact that we have created, and I've said this a million times, we've created the largest billionaire class in the history of humanity. And we've done it on the backs of the poor and working class. And yet you still have people who are saying, well, you know, the reason our deficits are so big, the reason our debt's so big is because we, you know, we feed those poor people and we let those immigrants come in. You go, well, no, wait a minute. It's because the Musks of the world get away with not paying their share of taxes, just like in Social Security. The fact that, you know, at a quarter after midnight, Musk paid every bit of taxes he was going to pay into Social Security on just his Tesla money. You take all of the companies that he's involved. It was like a minute after midnight. He'd paid everything he's going to pay into Social Security. But you, me, everybody else, 24/7, 365.
Yeah, all of the things that they keep looking into that they want to get rid of for the government spending for the DOGE stuff. It's all these tiny little things. You know, like they found some weird study that they were doing that was like $10,000 from NIH or something. And they're like, oh, that's got to go.
Yeah, it's cats like, okay, walking on treadmills.
Yeah, like you're going to nickel and dime us to death, but you're not going to touch, you know, the planes that we're spending a fortune on that don't work.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and this is the point in this. The point is to get you to hate your government. Well, look at all the wasteful spending. It's to get you into the mindset that there's this giant office of waste, fraud, and abuse behind a gold-plated door, when the reality is most of that money goes into research, goes into funding job programs, into funding, you know, working people.
Yeah, exactly. Working people and little things like curing cancer and, you know, stuff like that.
You know, little
things. It's frustrating.
Little things.
So but I guess, again, like this goes back to the whole idea of the election and whether or not, you know, how we're going to respond to this. Are we going to, you know, just let it hurt the country and sit back and be like, this is what y'all wanted?
And that's where I'm at.
That's kind of where I am too. Like I am still in the burn it down mode. Like y'all want to burn it down, burn it down. Let me know how that works out for you.
No, because you know, as I started off, you know, there, you know, as I started today's program off, you know, there's a meme going around, you know, how does it go? The rich getting richer, lazy living free, and the middle class paying for it all ends on January 20th. And you go, no, no, the rich are still going to get much, much richer. And the lazy, who are generally the rich, are going to get much, much richer. It's the middle class who's going to, well, they're going to pay for it all and double. And yeah, it's not going to end on January 20th. It's going to get worse. And there's part of me that goes, you know, all these people who wanted this, maybe they do have to suffer. You know, maybe it's got to get, maybe Elon Musk is right. Maybe things have got to get really bad for a while before we get our heads screwed on. And as I've been saying from the day after election, the solutions will come out of the suffering of their savagery. That's I think the only way we're going to move this country in a different direction.
I think you're right, and it's sad to think about all of the people that are going to be hurt from that. It's going to create a terrible country and an awful society, and it's going to be sad and it's going to be hard.
Now, look, I'm going to get a bunch of emails.
This is what
people,
they wanted.
I'm going to get a bunch of people going, well, I didn't vote for this. I know probably you didn't. I didn't. I know you didn't either. And a lot of us didn't. But the reality is, in order to, you know, come midterms to start turning this ship around, maybe there's got to be some suffering that wake people up to the, oh, yeah, they really did mean me. When they said they were going to gut Social Security, they were going to privatize Medicare, they're going to go after all of our social safety net programs, the few that are left. Oh, that was me they were talking about.
Yeah, I wonder how that's going to work out for Republicans, because the majority in Congress is so small that, you know, there are still a couple of people in there who are Republicans in plus Biden districts, where you're like, you guys, you may not make it in a midterm if the country is that furious at you.
Well, look, the anger is real. We both know that. The anger, and I argue it's justified. I'm 100% on board with the working class that is angry because they've been screwed over mm-hmm. for decades. It's that the Democrats haven't offered enough and the right solutions, in my opinion, and Republicans have sold them fool's gold. At some point, you've got to get both of them to figure out, hey, Democrats, what is the message forward? How are we going to make lives better? And, oh, hey, the Republicans are not your friend, dum-dum. I think we need that wake-up moment.
Me too. And I agree, the only way that it's going to happen is with pain and suffering.
Terrible, terrible stuff. It's going to be a long 2 years, Sarah. But as always, I appreciate your thoughts, your time. I look forward to, well, I shouldn't say look forward to it, but I look forward to having you back.
Oh, thank you. Happy New Year to everybody.
You as well. Thanks so much, our good friend Sarah Burris. Make sure you check out her work over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Locally grown radio, WFHR. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Increasing clouds tonight to low of 5 to 10. Clouds to start tomorrow morning, then some sunshine for the afternoon, a high near 20. And partly sunny and upper teens for Wednesday. Turning mostly cloudy for Thursday, maybe a few flurries, and a high in the mid-20s. Currently, it's 12 degrees.
Hi, this is Beth, your new host for The Kitchen is Open, the award-winning show within the morning show. Each Monday morning at 9 a.m., we'll tackle topics, teach techniques, and tell you what to do or not to do when it comes to cooking or the kitchen. I'll also bring you interviews with local chefs and restaurant owners with insight on what it takes to make it in the food industry. Listen as I work with James, Seth, and others as we learn, laugh, and have fun. The Kitchen is Open. Same kitchen, new host.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the question I have is coming out of Ohio, when Trump takes over and J.D. Vance is the vice president, who's going to fill that Senate seat? In Ohio, a lot of names being thrown around. Ohio Lieutenant Governor John Husted, the late and emerging, potentially leading contender to replace J.D. Vance. I'm still hoping that no matter who it is, I'm hoping Sherrod Brown runs against them in the next term, because it would be great to have Sherrod Brown back in the Senate. But here to share some thoughts, one of my favorite former Ohio congressmen and my political analyst here on the program, Bob Ney. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So, what do you think? What do you think of Husted? Do you think he's going to be the guy who's going to replace Vance?
I don't know that he's going to get it. He's been to Mar-a-Lago, so that caused a lot of speculation.
My dad kissed the ring. Okay.
Oh yeah, but a lot of people within the party are upset with him because he went contrary to Trump and said the Ohio elections are secure, et cetera, et cetera. And he hasn't made that many pro-Trump statements, but let's face it, neither did J.D. Vance, and he became the vice president of the United States. So it looks like you said, it's been down there. I'm still going to throw out two names who I think are main contenders with Husted. One is Jane Timken, who was chair of the Republican Party in Ohio at
one
time. And an industrialist family, no question about it, from Canton, Ohio area. The second one, and before anybody Googles and says Bob didn't reveal what he should have, as a matter of disclosure, my first campaign manager, Mike Carey, has become a congressman, Congressman Carey from Ohio. And he's in contention, too, based on the fact of being very, very strong in a general election because of positions that would be, more moderate. So I think it's one of those three, either Husted, Timken, or Carey. I think if I were Sherrod Brown, I would be hoping that Husted gets it. Although he's the lieutenant governor, he hasn't been, a household name, et cetera. He was previously Speaker of the House. But again, He has not been a household name. So if Sherrod were to run again, I think that would be the more aggressive campaign he could run, which would be against Husted.
Yeah, and a former speaker.
I don't get it yet, but those are the three names, Rick.
And a former speaker of the House that didn't go to jail from Ohio. Okay.
Yes, the last one is doing 20.
There you go. And look, you know, we'll see. We'll see who I'm with you. I hope it is Husted, because I do think like you do. He's a little bit weaker than the others, and I do want Sherrod back. I think we need a working class champion in the Senate. I got to get your thoughts on President Biden shooting down the U.S. Steel Nippon takeover. Thoughts?
Well, it seems to be on track with what the workers would like to see, and The alternatives to the Japanese, I think, would be obviously more favorable for us, for American workers. So seems that the president's made the right move on that. I don't even consider that I've seen any articles where he's been criticized, I don't think.
Just a little bit. I mean, just a little bit by some of the people who were obviously paid by Nippon to go out there and do the work of. And look, you got to give them credit. You know, Pennsylvania was carpet bombed with propaganda from Nippon about how it was going to be great for the workers, going to be great for the country. Mm-hmm. And, you know, waving the American flag from mm-hmm. Japan. And me, I think, you know, steel production. Domestic production is something that should be a national security issue, should be something that we hold here at home. And I know, you know, corporate America doesn't really give a rat's behind about this country most of the time, but this is one of those things that I don't know, not comfortable with foreign ownership of.
Right. You know, this was an issue dear to my heart. I marched down the streets past the Treasury to the White House with 10,000 people from your state, my state of Ohio, and other states years back, protesting to President Clinton. We wanted a 201, which was be a favorable motion, and we didn't get it. And then we protested with Bush, and we actually got the 201, but unfortunately it was a bit late for places like Wheeling Pittsburgh Steel. But it's been an issue that when we pushed way back under Clinton and Bush, those administrations, we use the national security argument many, many times. We use the worker argument, but we use national security argument.
Yeah, the so worker
it's something dear to my heart. I think the preservation of steel is major in this country.
Absolutely agree. But the sad reality is, evidently our politicians don't care about workers, because that argument never seems to carry water. When you throw the national security argument out there and they start worrying about soccer moms and all of that, they start to listen.
Right. True. That's true.
Now, in this case, I give Biden credit because, you know, part of his legacy is being a pro-union president, a pro-American worker president. And I think ultimately this is going to work out in the best interest of American workers, and good on him for doing it, because he could have just kicked it down the road to Trump to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. So it was a good thing.
There you go. I got to get your thoughts on Doge Boy. Evidently, Doge Boy went ballistic a couple of days ago. Actually, about a week ago, over these H-1B visas. I find it interesting that the people who are, you know, we're going to get the big bus and we're throwing all them foreigners out. He went to bat for this H-1B visa program and in a big way. And so I'm curious, what are your thoughts of these visa programs, since there seems to be so much abuse? And what should we be doing on that front?
This took a lot of sides. Before I answer your question about the H-1B visas, let me get into one other thing, if I could. This turned into an Indian American issue. And I like to call her Laura Looney, Laura Loomer.
Yeah, yeah. Stick with the Looney.
Where did she come from?
Florida.
Why is she so powerful in the Republican Party? She was flying on the plane with Trump, you know, et cetera. And she's the one that had, they had made statements about the White House would smell like curry if, you know, Kamala Harris was elected, and it would turn into a telemarketing center, you know. Indian Americans are very successful as a group in this country, very successful. And Indian Americans provide, you know, clout, just like African Americans and Latino base here in this country. And if I were running the Republican Party, I would court the Indian American population versus having people all of a sudden take this issue and then turn it into an anti-Indian American issue, as Laura Looney has and others. So that was the first side of it. You know, it became that kind of issue, which really shouldn't, to single out, you know, one country. People come from all over the world with these visas. Now a lot do, you know, come from India. So then there's the issue itself, which you have Elon Musk and you have Vivek Ramaswamy, who are for these. You have Stephen Miller, who is now senior advisor to the president, and he doesn't even want student visas to come into this country. So there's a balance here somewhere. HB1 visas, of which they do, I don't know, 68,000 a year. There is a need in the country, but it's not because, and this is where the issue's been just turned around, it's not because Americans are lazy or because American workers are not bright. It's just in that field fills a niche, which there becomes sometimes shortages, and people come in and out on these visas. They might stay X amount of time. They might leave after a few months. So that's kind of the real issue to be looked at. Now, on the other hand, you have to be careful on these visas, because people who would normally make maybe $110,000 a year are coming from countries where they make far less. So they can come in for $50,000 a year, right. $56,000 a year, right? So, I mean, that has to be watched, and there needs to be a fairness guide of what they're really making. And then you can judge that they really are needed, but they're needed at the pay level, you know, of what they should be. Otherwise, they really aren't needed and are brought in to save some of the company's money. Now, to blanketly stop the visas, you know, as Stephen Miller and some others want to do, I think would be wrong. But they then again, to just allow people to come in and be paid whatever is wrong too. But it shows a big division when it was brought up by Musk and Ramaswamy. It kind of showed the split, because the pure MAGA people are like, what do you mean? Nobody needs to come into this country.
Yeah.
And that's what happened when that issue was brought out. Plus throw in, you know, the comments that became anti-Indian, and then it just became a real mess.
Well, and you had Musk's tweet, the reason I'm in America, along with so many critical people who built SpaceX, Tesla, and hundreds of other companies that made America strong, is because of H-1B. He says, take a big step back and go blank yourself in the face. I will go to war on this issue, the likes of which you cannot possibly comprehend.
Right.
And you go, again, another reason why someone in this country should not have a half a trillion dollars to be able to influence one person, influence a policy like this. But, you know, for me, in the days after, you saw stories popping up that Musk himself was firing American workers and bringing people in on H-1B visas, basically using these as a way to get cheap labor and exploitable labor, and then turning around and calling American workers lazy and not willing to work, or not willing to work for the wages he was willing to pay.
Yeah, and again, I think there's a balance here. When this issue came up years back, and my initial reaction, I can remember when they brought the issue up and we were going to have a vote on it. And I said, you know, I was against any of the visas. And then I took a look at it, and certain caps, you know, were put in place, and certain need was out there. And they showed us some statistics that if you just did away with them, we'll have some problems. But again, I think we have to look at it as to, you know, what the person is paid. And if they're paid in a basis that would be equal to what they would make if they were, you know, born and raised here, then that's different. To blanketly cancel them would be bad, but to allow people to be underpaid and therefore you don't hire the American at $100,000 because you're hiring somebody else at $50,000, then that's not good.
No, I'm with you. I want to get your thoughts on Speaker Johnson. Evidently, the Republicans came around. Johnson's the guy for now. You know, any thoughts on how long he lasts? Let's start there.
I think I'm kind of saying that I think he'll be gone around June. That's what I think.
Okay. Does he get his one big, beautiful bill through?
Well, there's nine now that can take him out. And of course, nine people held out to show him, we're the nine. Here we are. We can take you out. I would like to go back to the original House rule where you had to have, you know, majority, 218, no matter what party's in control.
But, right.
So it's nine now. Trump's going to have an agenda. He is going to have very few votes to spare, Johnson. I'm saying June because here's what I'm thinking. If the agenda doesn't pass for whatever reason, and let's look at something. We had 30-some Republicans that told Donald Trump no. Think about that, because he wanted to eliminate the debt ceiling. So let's say Trump does something where everybody's not on board. Johnson loses some votes. He can't pass it in the House, or he passes it right on the nose, which makes it weak to go to the Senate, by the way. Then I think eventually, who's going to get blamed for the Trump agenda not being successful?
Not Trump.
You think it's going to be Trump? Nah, it's going to be Johnson. And he's got to go, and we got to get a new person. Once that comes out of the White House, it's over with. And look, Trump was bad-mouthing him to begin with, and I think somebody said, hey, if he goes before Monday, you may not get certified. So, oh, okay. And he got on the phone and got the votes. Doesn't mean he'll continue. Trump will continue to do that for Johnson.
Yeah, so we'll wait for that tweet to come out or the truth, whatever. We'll wait for that to come out. Johnson's the biggest loser. And now I never liked him. I never wanted. That'll be the message. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, I figure we've always got the 100 days, don't we? You know,
yeah.
January, February, March into the 100 days, April. And it's the president's first 100 days. They're supposed to be, you know, honeymoon effect, totally effective. If they are effective, Johnson will remain. If they aren't effective, if they can't get what they want because moderates don't do it or the ultra-right doesn't do it, whatever, and if Trump has to pick up the phone every single vote, then I argue by June it's probably going to be, my agenda didn't make it, it was Johnson's fault, he needs to go.
And then does the agenda get picked up again, or is this one of those things, now we're at the midterms?
Well, if Johnson goes, I don't know that they'll have a speaker for a month. Look at history.
So you're going to give everyone a glimmer of hope that all the bad stuff's not going to happen.
Well, I think some things will go through, and there might be something crafted on a bipartisan basis, maybe. But I think a lot of the issues are going to have trouble within the Republicans, and there's just not enough numbers. Johnson doesn't have enough of a majority. And again, if something doesn't pass, the White House is not going to say that it's the White House's fault for not crafting a bill that had bipartisan support. They're going to blame it on somebody, and that's why I think it would be Johnson. Now, if Johnson goes, it's the Republicans' biggest mistake, because look at McCarthy. 15 rounds to become speaker. He gets booted out. After he gets booted out, remember, we had candidates that came forth that, yeah, that's our candidate. Oh, no, we don't want you. They didn't even make the vote. And finally, there was Johnson. If Johnson leaves, who will they get?
That's the
question.
They
will not have a consensus.
That's the question. Finally, I want to get your thoughts on the president's Presidential Medal of Freedom ceremony back on January 4th. Some interesting names, but the right has glommed on to George Soros and Hillary Clinton, the evil. They've been chewing on that. Any thoughts of giving them the Presidential Medal of Freedom?
Well, I'll give Hillary a pass because, I mean, she was first lady, United States Senator candidate. George Soros, you know, he and the other guys, the Koch brothers, they've got these big packs, and nobody knows who gives to these packs, so I'm not a huge fan.
Yeah.
But the president can do what he wants.
No, I thought it was interesting that everyone lost their mind about George Soros, but we heard nothing about David Rubenstein, who was the co-founder and co-chairman of the Carlyle Group.
Right.
Nobody talks about that.
No.
And I'm going, yeah, right. I'm a little more, you know, Carlyle Group, problem there. But again, it's another example of, you know, even one of the better Democrats. And I think as a president, Joe Biden was one of the better Democrats, you know, still, you know, kowtowing to the corporate interest.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're right. Rubenstein should have been a flashpoint, but he wasn't. It was all Soros. Even Hillary got downplayed.
Yeah. Well, Soros is the evil on the right. That's where evidently where all liberals get their money from, George Soros.
Well, and of course, George Soros went after liberals. I personally have friends that he went after that were Democrat liberals, and he went after them, and they weren't happy with him. But these PACs, you know, Soros, the Koch brothers, Karl Rove, I put all of them in the same bag, no matter whether they're left or right, in the sense that everybody that gives to those PACs ought to be known.
Yep.
Because you can have other rich people that can put money into there for some vested interest, or they got into a fight with a member of Congress or whatever, and they can throw money in there and it's just hidden. I never have liked the fact that they, you know, aren't accountable like anybody else would be if they give money to candidates.
No, I'm right there with you. Right there with you, Bob. As always, great stuff. Appreciate the thoughts. We'll see if June is literally the deadline. But Bob, I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Rick.
Our good friend Bob Ney. I want to hear your thoughts. You think that's a reasonable prediction? Yeah, come June? Something to mark the calendar with. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So here's a little bit of corporate-controlled media malfeasance. Evidently, Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist Anne Telnaes, she announced that she's leaving the Washington Post, quitting the Washington Post, after it was reported that the editors there killed one of the cartoons that she had put forth. A cartoon depicting the likes of Jeff Bezos, the owner of the Washington Post, Mark Zuckerberg, the owner of the head guy over there at Facebook Meta, the AI CEO Sam Altman, and Patrick Soon Shiong, the LA Times publisher, Walt Disney, ABC, those folks, all of them genuflecting to Donald Trump, holding up a bag of cash. Because understand, they all gave the money. I think one of them gave Biden money for his inauguration. All of these folks, $1 million to Dear Leader. And this is what happens when you have the corporate-controlled media and these billionaires basically worshiping at the altar of power. And they're all doing it. Because since November, it's been reported that Trump's raised somewhere around $200 million for a bunch of groups that are going to fund his inauguration. They're going to fund his political operations, his presidential library, all of that stuff. About $200 million to this point. That is only going to grow even more as the weeks, months, and the next 4 years happen. Business leaders are going to, please, deregulate me. Here's a boatload of cash. This is where I keep coming back to where I'm very worried, because corporate America has bought in. Our mainstream corporate controlled media, they've bought in. If all we hear is how wonderful Dear Leader is, you know, when we start hearing that Donald Trump had 18 hole in ones, when we hear that the first time Donald Trump ever went bowling, he got a perfect game. When we start with those kind of things, then we'll know we're actually North Korea. Because we're heading down that path where everyone's paying homage to the chair. Everyone's going to kiss the ring. Everyone's going to see what favor they can get. And when you have a media outlet like the Washington Post killing a very simple, very kind of innocent cartoon because it might make Dear Leader mad, you know, you got a problem. And again, this is why the next 4 years, the corporate controlled media is not going to save us. The right-wing, for-profit, corporate-controlled media is not going to be your friend. The clickbait media is not going to be your friend. Because understand, there are extremes on both sides. That all it is, it's about making money. It's about getting the clicks. It's about getting the views. It's about getting your attention. Instead of actually talking about important issues, it's about, well, chaos. And there are chaos merchants all around. For me, it's about follow the money. And the money seems to be enriching Donald Trump and his sphere very quickly. And when you have Disney and the LA Times and the Washington Times and Facebook, when you have an AI, when you have these people in line, be kind of worried. Because it's going to get ugly. And look, as I started today off with, we've been fed so much. The campaign was all about how we're going to bring down egg prices and gas is going to be a buck a gallon and, you know, eggs are going to be 99 cents and, you know, all the prices are going to deflate and rents are coming down and, you know, car insurance is going to get slashed and burned and it's going to be utopia, you know, like it was when Trump was president last time. And when you stop and you think about, you know, when Trump was president last time, sorry, wasn't that great? We still had mass inequality. We still had wages that were far too low. Had an interesting conversation with a relative who, you know, worked back in the late 60s, early in the 70s and 80s. And I said, you know, what'd you make in 1980? You know, what were you making in 1980? She said, oh, about 16 grand a year. And when you do the inflation calculator, she was making mid-50s. With full health care, with full dental, with a full pension, with, you know, several weeks vacation, paid sick, all of this stuff. And I asked because, you know, I had remembered that my grandparents, because it's the one year that I'd ever seen my grandparents' tax returns. It was 1985 into 86. And they had made $52,000 that year. And you go, a truck driver and a cashier, you know, back in the mid 80s, made $52,000. Now they worked they worked hours. They did well. In today's money, that's 150 grand a year. That, my friends, is what working hard, playing by the rules, and then getting ahead looks like. And over these last 40 years, we've seen a stagnation of wages, and not just because of the pandemic and inflation because of that, but because, well, we've crushed unions, we've given corporate power in spades to these handful of people, and what's happened? The lives of working people have gotten worse. And the avenues for that to get better are about to get a lot harder to find. Because I do believe Trump and company are going to pursue Project 2025. I think all of the things that they've been wanting to enact and don't even need legislation for, just putting people into the positions like at the NLRB or the Department of Labor or at HHS or, you know, wherever. People who have a goal of dismantling, destroying, and, well, crippling, and ultimately privatizing. These are the folks who are going to be very dangerous, and we're not going to pay attention to them because we're going to watch the train wreck that's going to be Congress. We're going to watch the ridiculous chaos coming out of the White House. But in the back, where all of the agencies who just show up and do their work every day, that's where the dismantling is going to happen. And that's where people should be most afraid of what this administration can do. Because the damage that they do will take decades to undo. So for me, the question then becomes, how much are we willing to put up with? And will we pay attention? So this idea that the rich are going to stop getting richer on January 20th and the lazy are going to stop being lazy because the middle class is going to get something is ridiculous. But it's the propaganda we've been sold. We'll see what happens. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I want to hear all the crazy memes, all the thoughts, all the things that we've been sold so that we can document that. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com.
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM. W248DE Wisconsin Rapids. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. A state of emergency is declared in Maryland, where schools will be closed tomorrow. 10 to 12 inches of snow possible in some areas.
I'm Chris Van Cleve at Chicago O'Hare Airport. Crews here are dealing with freezing rain and frigid temperatures. That is causing delays across the board here, in part because every single airplane has to be de-iced. In other parts of the Midwest, all the way out to the Northeast, airports are being impacted from this storm. In many places, it's digging out from or being hammered by snow. That means thousands of delays and cancellations.
Total delays within, into, or out of the U.S. today are over 8,700, and FlightAware.com also reports more than 2,300 cancellations. Under a much different setting on Capitol Hill compared to 4 years ago, Congress certifies President-elect Donald Trump's election win. CBS Natalie Brandon.